And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Also, one of the most corrupt. Well, today's August the 2nd, 214th day of the year. 151 days remain to the end of the year. You know, I don't normally follow politics, but China, rightly or wrongly, told Pelosi if she came to Taiwan, it'd be war. And in her, ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. She showed up today in Taiwan. Everybody's waiting to see what China's gonna do. If something happens, it's gonna be Pelosi's war. And I hope she's happy fighting it. I was a infantry officer, but I wouldn't come back to help her. She's been too arrogant. Well, on this day in 338 BC, a Macedonian army led by Philip II defeated the combined forces of Athens and Thebes in the Battle of Chaeronea, securing Macedonian hegemony in Greece and the Aegean. 2016 BC, the Carthaginian army led by Hannibal defeats a numerically superior Roman army at the Battle of Cannae. 49 BC, Caesar, who marched to Spain early in the year, leaving Marcus Antonius in charge of Italy, defeats Pompey's general Afrianus and Petreius and Lerida north of the Ebro River. 461, Majorian is arrested near Tortona in northern Italy and deposed by the Suebian general Ricimer as puppet emperor. 932, after a two-year siege, the city of Toledo in Spain surrenders to the forces of the Caliph of Cordoba, Ibn al-Rahman III, assuming an important victory in his campaign to subjugate the Central March. 1274, Edward I of England returns from the Ninth Crusade and is crowned king 17 days later. 1343, after the execution of her husband, Jean de Clisson sells her estates and raises a force of men with which to attack French shipping and ports. 1377, Russian troops are defeated by forces of the Blue Horde Khan, Arapsha, in the battle of on the Payana River. 1415, Thomas Gray is executed for participating in the Southampton Plot. Now, for those who don't know what the Southampton Plot was, conspiracy to depose King Henry V of England is revealed in 1415, just as the king was about to sail on a campaign to France as part of the Hundred Years' War. They were going to replace him with Edmund Mortimer, the 5th Earl of March. Now, Mortimer was the great-grandson of Lionel of Antwerp, the 1st Duke of Clarence, second surviving son of King Edward III, and his claim to the throne was superior, and she didn't want to allow female intermediaries to that of Henry V and his father, Henry IV, who derived their claim from Henry IV's father, John of Gaunt, 1st Duke of Lancaster. He was the third surviving son, Edward III. So this was basically a family squabble. During Henry Hudson's search for the Northwest Passage, he sailed into what's now known as Hudson Bay. 1776, on this date, the signing of the Declaration of Independence took place. 1790, first U.S. census is conducted. 1798, French Revolutionary Wars, the Battle of the Nile concludes in a British victory. 1830, Charles X of France abdicates the throne in favor of his grandson Henri or Henry. 1858, the Government of India Act of 1858 replaces company rule in India with that of the British Raj. 1869, Japan's Edo society class system is abolished as part of the Meiji Restoration reforms. 1870, Tower Subway, the world's first underground tube railway, opens in London, England. 1873, the Clay Street Hill Railroad begins operating the first cable car in San Francisco's famous cable car system. 1897, Anglo-Afghan War. The siege of Malacan ends when a relief column is able to reach the British garrison in the Malacan Estates. 1903, the Lyndon Preobrazhenny uprising against the Ottoman Empire begins. 1914, the German occupation of Luxembourg during World War I begins on this date. 1916, World War I, Austrian sabotage causes the sinking of the Italian battleship Leonardo da Vinci in Toronto. 1918, the first general strike in Canadian history takes place in Vancouver. 1922, a typhoon hits Shantou, the Republic of China, kills more than 50,000 people. 1923, Vice President Calvin Coolidge becomes president on the death of President Warren G. Harding. 1932, the positron, an antiparticle of the electron, is discovered by Carl Anderson. 1934, Reichskanzler Adolf Hitler becomes the Führer of Germany following the death of President Paul von Hindenburg. 1937, the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 is passed in America, the effect of which is to render marijuana and all its byproducts illegal, though now you can find them on every corner. The Albert Einstein and Leo Szilard write a letter to Franklin D. Roosevelt urging him to begin the Manhattan Project to develop a nuclear weapon. 1943, the Holocaust. A Jewish prisoner stages a revolt at Treblinka, one of the deadliest of the Nazi death camps, where approximately 900,000 people were murdered in less than 18 months. Also in 1943, World War II, the motor torpedo boat PT-109 is rammed. By the Japanese destroyer Amagiri, and it sinks. Lieutenant John F. Kennedy, future U.S. president, saves all but two of his crew. 1944. Aznam, birth of the Soviet Republic of Macedonia, celebrated as the Day of the Republic in North Macedonia. You know, whenever socialists or communists take over, first thing they do is the people's this and the people's that. 1944, World War II, the largest trade convoy in the world wars arrives safely in the Western approaches. 1945, World War II ended the Potsdam Conference, where Western powers gave away a lot of Eastern Europe. 1947, British South American Airways Avro Lancastrian airliner crashes into a mountain during a flight from Buenos Aires, Argentina to Santiago, Chile. Wreckage wouldn't be found until 1998. 1968, an earthquake hits Casiguran, Aurora, Philippines, killing more than 270 people and wounding 261. 1973, a flash fire kills 51 people at the Summerland Amusement Center in Douglas on the Isle of Man. 1980, a bomb explodes at the railway station in Bologna, Italy, killing 85 and wounding more than 200. 1982, the Helsinki Metro, the first rapid transit system in Finland, is open to the general public on this date. 1985, Delta Airlines Flight 191, a Lockheed L 1011 TriStar crashes at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. 137 people to die. 1989, Pakistan is readmitted to the Commonwealth of Nations after having restored democracy for the first time since 1972. 1989, a massacre is carried out by Indian peacekeeping forces in Sri Lanka, kills 64 ethnic Tamil civilians. 1990, Iraq invades Kuwait, eventually leading to the Civil War. And why did they invade Kuwait? Because our ambassador said, we don't care. 1999, the Gaisal train disaster claims 285 lives in Assam, India. 2005, Air France Flight 358 lands at Toronto Pearson International Airport and runs off the runway, causing the plane to burst into flames. There were 12 injuries, but luckily no fatalities. And in 2014, at least 146 people are killed, more than 114 injured in a factory explosion in Kunshan, Jiangsu, in China. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day. Ahud Demay in the Syriac Orthodox Church. Basil Fool for Christ, Russian Orthodox Church. Blessed Justin Rossiello, Eusebius of Vercelli, Peter Faber, Peter Julian Aimard, Plague Moon, Pope Stephen I, Portiuncola Indulgence, the Pardon of Assisi, the plenary indulgence related to St. Francis of Assisi in the Catholic Church, Samuel David Ferguson in the Episcopal Church, Day of Azerbaijani Cinema in Azerbaijan, Our Lady the Angels Day in Costa Rica. In Russia, it's Paratroopers Day. In North Macedonia, it's Republic Day. And it's Roman genocide-related observances, which include the Roma Holocaust Memorial Day and the Council of Europe, European Parliament. The Romani were the what were referred to as gypsies. All right, let's see what else we got. Alrighty. 257, St. Stephen the First Death ends his reign as Catholic Pope. I don't know if he's God's representative. He could keep being Pope after he's dead. In 1057, Frederick van Lotharingen elected as the first Belgian Pope, Stephen the Ninth. 1100, King William II of England, also known as William Rufus, is killed by an arrow shot by Sir Walter Tyrrell while hunting in the New Forest. 1542, French troops leave Flanders. 1552, the Treaty of Passau. Emperor Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor, accepts the Lutheran religion. 1578, the Battle of Rijnmond. Spanish Habsburg forces are defeated by Dutch troops during the 80 Years' War. 1581, Leiden University names Rudolf Snellius as a math professor. 1665, French expedition against the barbarians in Tunis and Algiers. 1695, Daniel Quarry receives a British patent for his portable barometer. 1701, the Great Peace of Montreal is signed between New France and the North American Indian nations at the urging of Huron chief Conde de Ronc. 1718, Austria joins the Triple Alliance. 1738, France offers the Holy Roman Emperor Charles VI mediation in his war with Turkey. 1782, George Washington, first president, creates the honorary badge of distinction. 1787, Swiss Alpine explorer Horace Benedict de Saussure becomes the third person to reach the top of Mont Blanc. 1791, Samuel Briggs and his son are granted a patent for a nail-making machine. 1802, Napoleon Bonaparte's declared consul for life after winning the national referendum. Eventually became emperor. 1819, the first parachute jump in the U.S. by Frenchman Louis Charles Guillet took place over Jersey City. 1830, Charles X of France abdicates in favor of his grandson, the Duke of Bordeaux. 1831, the 10-day campaign begins. The Dutch army occupies Belgium. 1832, the Battle of Bad Axe in Wisconsin. 1,300 Illinois militia defeat Sauk and Fox Native Americans, ending the Black Hawk War in the U.S. 1858, the first mailboxes are installed in Boston and New York City streets. 1861, a skirmish at Dug Springs, Missouri, results in a Union victory. 1864, the Saratoga Racecourse, America's oldest thoroughbred racetrack, opens its inaugural race with 4 days of racing. 1865, on this date, Lewis Carroll publishes Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. He was also a mathematician. 1865, the transatlantic cable being laid by the SS Great Eastern between Great Britain and America snaps and is lost. 1877, San Francisco Public Library opens with 5,000 volumes. 1880, British Parliament officially adopts Greenwich Mean Time. 1887, Chester Hodge of Beloit, Wisconsin, patents spur barbed wire. It's known as the Devil's Hat Band. 1892, George Wheeler is granted a patent for a prototype of the escalator. 1894, Dutch death duties are first introduced in Britain. They figure you don't need it, so we'll take it. 1894, the Dutch Society for Women's Suffrage gets a royal charter. 1903 saw the unsuccessful uprising of Macedonians against Turkey. 1909, Army Air Corps formed as the Army takes its first delivery of planes from the Wright brothers. 1909 saw the U.S. issue its first Lincoln pennies. 1911, Haiti's dictator, Simon, flees on U.S. warship near Jamaica. 1914, the Belgian government receives a German ultimatum. 1914, the German press falsely reports the French had bombed Nuremberg. Also, 1914, German troops overthrow Luxembourg, and they sign a secret treaty of alliance with Turkey. On the same date, Great Britain mobilized. We've also got the Potsdam Conference coming to an end, and Russian troops invaded Eastern Prussia. 1916, World War One. Austrian sabotage causes the sinking of the Leonardo da Vinci. We talked about that earlier. 1918 also saw Japan announce it's deploying troops to Siberia in the aftermath of World War I. 1920, Marcus Garvey presents his Back to Africa program in New York City. The problem is most of the people only knew about Africa from hearing about it and seeing it in a book. They had no idea what they were getting into. 1921, after 3 hours deliberation, a Chicago jury acquits 8 Chicago White Sox accused in the Black Sox scandal. But the very next day, they're banned from organized baseball for life. It was believed they took bribes to throw a game, throw the World Series. Benito Mussolini signed a peace treaty with Abyssinia. That's Ethiopia. In 1931, Spanish Catalonia agreed, the voters, for an autonomous status, 99%, which of course is impossible, but what's a little cheating among voters? We saw a lot of that in this last election. 1934, the first airplane trained, a plane towed three male gliders behind it. 1934 saw Adolf Hitler become commander-in-chief of the German armed forces. 1934, a first that amazed the world, William Franks twirls an Indian club overhead 17,280 times in 1 hour. In 1938, Major League Baseball conducts the first test of bright yellow baseballs during the Dodgers versus Cardinals doubleheader. 1939, the Hatch Act prohibits political activity by federal workers. That's sneered at today. 1940, Clermont-Ferrand sentences General Charles de Gaulle to death. He became the French president. 1940, K.O. House of Saxon and Commandos focus on Glossaros and Silesia. 1941, the German 11th Army surrounds 20 Soviet divisions in Oman. 1942, Colonel General Hermann Hoss, Panzer Army reaches Kotelnikovo. 1943, the Sunderland seaplane sink the U-706 and the U-106. 1943, there's an armed revolt by 800 prisoners at Treblinka. The crematorium was destroyed. 200 escaped, but only 100 survived. 1944, Jewish survivors of Kovono Ghetto emerged from their bunker. 1944, Turkey broke diplomatic relations with Nazi Germany. 1945, for 3.5 days, suffering exhaustion, lack of water, and shark attacks in the Philippines, the surviving crew of USS Indianapolis were spotted by Wilbur Chuck Gwynn, a PV-1 Ventura pilot on a routine sector search. 316 survived. Most had injuries. 1945, another Potsdam conference between Stalin, Truman, and Churchill. And Churchill was replaced by Clement Attlee after losing the 1945 general election, but it ended on this date. 1952, 17-year-old future world champion Floyd Patterson wins the gold medal in the middleweight division of the Helsinki Olympic Games with a first-round KO of Romanian Vasily Tita. 1953, Betty Jack Davis, American country singer who was part of the Davis sisters with Skeeter Davis, killed in a car wreck at age 21. 1954, Tahar Ben Ammar, appointed Premier of Tunisia. 1957, Lovell Telescope's first light. By then, the world's largest steerable telescope at the Jordale Bank in England. 1958, Jordan and Iraq dissolve their Arab Federation after a whole 3 months. In 1961, the Beatles' first gig was as the house band for Liverpool's Cavern Club. In 1964, North Vietnam fires at the U.S. Navy destroyer, USS Maddox, in what became known as the Gulf of Tonkin Incident, that would eventually escalate U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. But we now know the Gulf of Tonkin Incident never happened. 1965, Maurice Safer sends first Vietnam report indicating the U.S. is losing. That's because it's being run by the suits in Washington and not the military. 1967, U.S.'s Lunar Orbiter 5 is launched, enters lunar orbit August 5th. 1967, In the Heat of the Night, directed by Norman Jewelson, based on John Bell's novel of the same name, starred Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger, premiered in the New York Academy Awards Best Picture for 1968. I like the TV show much better with Carol O'Connor. 1969, Bob Dylan makes surprise appearance at his 10th high school reunion in Hibbing, Minnesota. Okay. 1970, rubber bullets were used for the first time in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. All right. We've come to the end of our little history segment. Now, we've been talking about the Kennedy assassination and some of the mysterious dead witnesses. You know, one name that popped up prominently was Officer J.D. Tippit. While on patrol shortly after the assassination, he stopped a suspect who fit the description of Kennedy's killers being broadcast over the police radio. Now, this is the official verdict. And that suspect just happened to be Lee Harry Oswald, who shot and killed Officer Tippit. In actuality, Tippit was out of his assigned patrol area and behaving in an extremely erratic manner. Some described it as frantic. He wasn't where he was directed to be after the assassination, and he lied about his whereabouts when asked his exact location by the police dispatch. He wasn't just a little bit out of his area. He was in a dramatically different location. Mere minutes after the assassination of the president, Dallas police car pulled up and stopped in front of Oswald's apartment window, honked the horn twice, and left. Right after that, Oswald left, heading for the bus stop. Now, if it was an authentic Dallas police car, the only car in that area was Tippett's. In the minutes before his death, Tippit was described as behaving in a wild, extremely erratic manner, as though he's frantically searching for something. And the so-called suspect Tippit stopped didn't match even the slightest description of the president's assailant that was being broadcast on the police radio. According to eyewitnesses, Tippit conversed very amiably with the suspect for about a minute. Everybody assumed they were friends. And due to the timing issues that came to light, it's virtually impossible Oswald could have been in a location where Tippit stopped the suspect at the time the incident took place. But it made Earl Warren happy to find Oswald guilty of every crime that took place in Dallas. Now, officers at the scene described the murder weapon at the Tippit crime scene as an automatic. When Oswald was arrested at the movie theater for the crime of not paying for a 60-cent ticket, he had a revolver. Now, Surprisingly enough, officers found a wallet at the Tippit crime scene containing ID with the name Lee Harvey Oswald and Alec Hedell. The name Alec Hedell was a well-known floating alias used by military intelligence covert operatives at the time. And we've already discussed the fact that Oswald was in all likelihood in military intelligence. The great majority of eyewitness descriptions at the crime scene identified Tippit's assailant as a very an individual as being unlikely Harvey Oswald. In fact, the suspect was described by many people as Hispanic. The great majority of eyewitness descriptions at the crime scene that didn't fit the official version that it was Oswald were rejected by investigators. They knew who it was, they just had to prove it. In fact, witnesses were threatened, intimidated, in some cases, even shot. Little wonder under those circumstances, some witnesses eventually changed their testimony to fit the official version of the events. Now, people tend to forget that the first mysterious death associated with the Kennedy assassination, besides Kennedy's, was actually that of Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit. Tippit was one of the few Dallas police officers not assigned to the area of the president's motorcade. He was patrolling the Oak Cliff area of Dallas. That was his orders for the day. Shortly after 1 p.m., sitting alone in his patrol car, he was seen stopping his car near an individual who was walking along East 10th Street. And witnesses who clearly observed the incident said it didn't appear to be any trouble. To the contrary, they described Tippit as chatting amiably with the man. In fact, the unidentified man was standing near the curb, leaning down with his hands on the passenger side of the car. And apparently, the passenger window was down. And the witnesses said at no time did Tippit draw his own weapon, or did he direct the individual to adopt a less casual position. The two seemed to be talking very amiably. At that point, Tippit got out of the car and began to walk toward the front of the squad car. Man was stoned the other side with his... And Tippit had his hand placed on the butt of his gun. But before Tippit even reached the front of the car, the man pulled his own gun and shot Tippit three times in the chest. Then he walked around to the front of the car and shot Tippit a fourth time in the head. The suspect appeared to be very professional, confident, calmly walked away and picked up the shells on the ground that his gun had ejected, since it wasn't automatic, and he threw them in the bushes like it didn't amount to anything. That was the way eyewitnesses reported the event. Later became scripted in the official version that Officer Tippit stopped the suspect who fit the description going out of the police radio of President Kennedy's assassin, and that the individual was Lee Harvey Oswald, and it was Oswald who shot Tippit. Anything that didn't fit that official version was basically tossed aside. But if you look carefully, the official version does not stand up to scrutiny. In the commission's account, J.D. Tippit was a fine, dedicated officer driving his patrol car when he saw a man who fit the general description of the suspect wanted in the murder of President Kennedy. And this officer had the chance to make the arrest of a lifetime. But he didn't try to arrest this dangerous suspect, didn't draw his own gun. Instead, he called the man over to the car and they had a casual conversation. When you look at the timeline of the shooting of Tippit, that morning he called his oldest son, Alan, over to him, hugged him, and said, "No matter what happens today, I want you to know I love you." Now, everyone who knew him said overt signs of affection toward his son were uncharacteristic of Tippit. And that was the last time Alan Tippit saw his father alive. Now, sometime later on, Lee Harvey Oswald was seen at the Top 10 record store, a block from the Texas Theater. Then Oswald came home a short time later, was in a small record shop at... Oswald returned to the record shop a short time later, was there at the same time Tippit was. Now, there are many inconsistencies in the scripted version that Lee Harvey Oswald shot Officer Tippit. Contrary to the conclusions of the Warren Commission, it's been established that Officer Tippit was friends with both Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald. In fact, the three often had breakfast together. A number of witnesses reported that. Tippett's police unit was officially assigned to be patrolling the central Oak Cliff area of Dallas on the day of the assassination, and said his unit was seen in the North Oak Cliff area all that afternoon. He was not assigned to that district. Additionally, to that point, Tippett was not a little bit out of his assigned area. He was a way, way out of his assigned area. If you look at the map, they don't even... They don't even share a common boundary. Central Oak Cliff and North Oak Cliff are distinctly different areas. And although Officer Tippit was ordered to patrol in District 78, his actual location on the afternoon of the assassination was far to the northwest. Now, the actions of Tippit in relation to the assassination of Kennedy are worth noting. 12:20, he reported to on his police radio, 78 Claire, which meant he was done with lunch and back on patrol. At 12:45, and this is only 15 minutes after the president had been shot, Tippit was clearly seen in his car sitting at the Good Look gas station, an acronym for the, it was the Good Look Oil Company, in North Oak Cliff. Car was parked on the south end of the Houston Street Viaduct, and he was observing the cars coming off the ramp of the Houston Street Viaduct from downtown. That's where the assassination had taken place. Several gas station employees saw him sitting there. It was reported he stayed at the station for about 10 minutes, somewhere between 12:45 and 1 o'clock, and then went tearing off down Lancaster at high speed. Oswald's cab driver, William Whaley, testified he took the ramp down from the Houston Street Viaduct when he saw Oswald, and was during that time period that Tippit was watching the ramp. At 12:45, Tippit was asked by dispatch on his police radio to report his location. And he said, "I'm about Celeste and Bonnie View," which, if the witnesses are correct, was not true. He lied. It was apparently shortly after 12:50 that the witnesses saw Tippit take off rapidly in his car heading south. And that's further established by a radio call he placed at 12:54 telling police dispatch he was at 8th and Lancaster, which was several blocks south of the gas station. Then about 1 o'clock, he parked his car, went into the record store, Top 10 Records on Jefferson Street, and placed a phone call on the store's phone. According to witnesses, apparently the call went unanswered and Tippit left the store abruptly, appearing very agitated. At 1:03, he got a call from dispatch on his police radio, which he did not respond to. And rather than reporting to the Triple Underpass in downtown Dallas, as most police units did, even in some cases in direct violation of their orders, Tippit quite apparently was looking for someone or something. And according to Professor William Pulte, Tippett's movements are consistent with the actions of a man frantically looking for somebody. Got back in his police car and traveled west on 10th Street, past a car being driven by an insurance salesman named James Andrews. Contrary to police procedure, Tippit didn't put on his siren and pull the car over from behind. In fact, he passed Andrew's car, got in front of him, and stopped at an angle blocking the car. Got out of his police car and rushed to the driver's side of Andrew's car, directing his attention to the floor area between the seats. Not seeing whatever it was he was looking for, he rushed back to his own car, reversed direction, and sped away to the east. Now, according to witnesses who were driving behind Tippett's police car at that point, Tippit slammed on the brakes of his car, stopping so rapidly the driver behind him was unable to stop in time and hit the rear bumper of Tippit's police unit. Tippit appeared completely unconcerned with the matter. But then attending to the collision, he backed up rapidly toward the curb near 10th and Patton Street. He was then observed by several witnesses in his car at the curb near 10th and Patton, talking to a pedestrian through the passenger side of the police car. According to witnesses, the two conversed amiably and casually for about a minute.
According to Warren Commission, that pedestrian was Lee Harvey Oswald. But according to the eyewitnesses at the location, that was not Oswald at all. Also, after the shooting of President Kennedy, the landlady at Oswald's rooming house, Arlene Roberts, observed Oswald going into his room. Shortly after that, a police car pulled up in front of the rooming house. The horn was honked twice by the driver of the police car, who then drove away. Oswald left shortly after that. Now, if that car was actually the unit from the Dallas police, it had to be Tippett's, because he was the only unit assigned to the Oak Cliff area of Dallas that day. It's somewhat intriguing to consider Oswald's departure from Rooming House occurred only moments after that strange appearance and horn blowing of the patrol car from the Dallas Police Department. Investigations have virtually established that the only police car officially in the vicinity was that of Tippett. Less than 15 minutes after this incident, Tippett was savagely murdered and left dead in the street about a mile from Oswald's rooming house. Now, Oswald's whereabouts at 1:04 p.m. were pinpointed by his landlady. I looked out the window and saw Oswald standing at the bus stop. At 1:06, 2 minutes later, Officer Tippett, by some reports, had already been shot and was dead on the ground. Domingo Benavides spoke on the police radio in Tippett's unit. He radioed in and said, "Hello, police operator, we've had a shooting here. Police officer, somebody shot him." Police report stated the call came from witness Benavides over the police radio at 1:16. But that was after the shooting took place. Benavides made that call after he waited a while to ensure the killer was really gone from the scene and he wouldn't be attacked by him. Another eyewitness, Ted Bowley, certified in his legal affidavit, he arrived at the Tippett crime scene and saw Officer Tippett lying dead on the ground. Looked at his watch and it was 1:10 p.m. exactly. By that time, the assailants were long gone and there were already several bystanders looking at the crime scene. So the shooting had to have happened at least a couple of minutes before there. So if you look at the facts closely, 1:08 appears to be the exact approximation of the latest possible time for the shooting. And that crime scene was at 10th and Patton, over a mile away from the bus stop where Oswald was placed at 1:04. And the bus that came by during that time span was traveling in the opposite direction of 10th and Patton. Wouldn't have been time for Oswald to walk 1 mile and then converse with Officer Tippett for a minute prior to his murder at 1:08. And Jim Garrison established these facts. The only man to officially pursue and prosecute the assassination of President Kennedy. Garrison put the time of the shooting at 1:06. Now, first of all, given what was known about Oswald's movements, it was highly improbable he would have been physically present at the time of Tippett's murder. According to several eyewitnesses at the scene, Tippett was shot between 1:06 and 1:10. Deputy Sheriff Roger Craig, who was at the book depository at that time, confirmed this. When he heard of Tippett's death on the radio, he looked at his own watch, and it was 1:06 p.m. Did Oswald generally acknowledge he had returned to his rooming house at about 1? Left quickly, and Arlene Roberts, the housekeeper, observed him standing by the northbound Berkeley Avenue bus stop at 1:04. And the area where Tippett was killed was on the opposite direction, a mile to the south. So if you use the broadest interpretation of the time element, even if Oswald changed his mind about the bus and ran southward, it is impossible for him to have arrived at the scene before the shooting of the police officer. So what did the Warren Commission do? They changed the time of Tippett's death to 1:16. Warren Commission also concluded Tippett stopped Oswald because he fit the description of the president's assassin that had been broadcast over the police radio. And that was kind of a bizarre conclusion. The official version that Officer Tippett stopped a man who fit the description of President Kennedy's assassin simply makes no sense. The description over the police radio was so general it could have fit half the male population. And it also said the subject was carrying a rifle, which Oswald was not. And Tippett certainly didn't approach him as if he was a suspect. The actual broadcast over the radio was, "Attention all squads. Suspects believed to be a white male, about 30, 5 feet 10 inches, slender built, 165 pounds. Armed is what thought to be a 30-30 rifle. No further description or information is available at this time." So the broadcast description was for a subject that was neither short or tall, neither large or small, neither young or old. The description of for the average white guy, Oswald was a slight young man at 24 and only weighed 131 pounds, which wasn't a good fit for the description. And while there's no known reason for his appearance or behavior to arouse suspicion, the same can't be said of Tippett. Aside from there being no adequate explanation why Tippett stopped Oswald, the fact that Tippett was not in his routine patrol area, as one commission claimed, for reasons that remain suspicious, Tippett left his assigned patrol area in District 78 in South Dallas and driven to Oswald's neighborhood. And the eyewitness testimony about the man that shot Tippett did not match the description of Lee Harvey Oswald. In fact, numerous eyewitness accounts describe an assailant quite unlike Oswald, as with a constant disturbing pattern in the aftermath of JFK assassination. Witness testimony didn't align with the official version of events, was systematically ignored or marginalized. In fact, at least six eyewitnesses, all ignored by the Warren Commission, saw not one but two men involved in the shooting of Officer Tippett. So in actual fact, the description of Tippett's killer by several witnesses and police broadcasts are reasonably consistent with each other, but not with the Oswald arrested minutes later at the Texas Theater for the vicious crime of not buying a 60-cent ticket in the aftermath of the president being assassinated. The FBI summarily rejected the testimony of Aquila Clemens and stated the reason was because of her poor health. Although Ms. Clemens suffered from diabetes, it was obviously insufficient cause to reject her very valid testimony. Witness intimidation was obvious. In several cases, after a stubborn witness was shot at or otherwise intimidated, they changed their story to conform to the official version. Now, when Oswald was arrested, he had a revolver stuck in his belt that later investigation showed did not have a firing pin. Apparently, they were hoping for suicide by cop. Tippett was shot with an automatic. Two very experienced witnesses, a police sergeant, a combat experienced former Marine, testified they were certain the crime scene gun was an automatic. So it's very clear that the Warren Commission had their solution, they just had to make the facts fit it. Mr. Myers, after the shooting, the police found shells at the scene. They went on the radio and said there were 38 automatics. Oswald was arrested with a revolver that fires 38 specials, a shell that's clearly about a quarter of an inch longer. And they were stamped on the bottom. One said 38 special and one says 38 automatic. Automatic shells mean Oswald wasn't there and the evidence could have been planted. Now, District Attorney Garrison saw that matter as a huge red flag. He said, as I continued my research, I discovered beyond the eyewitnesses there was other evidence gathered and altered by the Dallas Homicide Unit showing Oswald had been framed in the Tippett murder. He said, for instance, I read transcripts of the messages sent over the Dallas Police Radio shortly after the murder. These were recorded automatically on a log. Just minutes after a citizen first reported the murder on Tippett's radio, Patrolman H. Number Summers in Dallas Police Unit 221 reported that an eyeball witness to the getaway man had been located. The suspect was described as having black wavy hair, wearing an Eisenhower jacket of light color, dark trousers and white shirt, and he was apparently armed with a .32 dark finish automatic pistol, which he had in his right hand. Moments later, Sergeant G. Hill reported the shell at the scene indicates the suspect is armed with an automatic .38 rather than a pistol. Well, if in fact the handgun used to shoot Tippett was an automatic, then clearly Oswald's didn't do it. Because the gun allegedly taken from Oswald when the Dallas police arrested him at the Texas Theater was a revolver. So unless Oswald stopped and changed guns, which nobody ever suggested, that put a hole in the government's case from the beginning. And there's no more serious matter on the planet to a police officer than a radio call of Officer Down. If there was ever a time or that another officer would get it right, it's when one of their own has been wounded. So if the officer on the scene made the point of saying over the radio the assailant was armed with an automatic, then you'd be pretty sure the assailant was armed with an automatic. In a 1986 interview, Hill said he knew the shells were 38 caliber because he picked one up and it said 38 caliber on the bottom. And it also said 38 auto. The bullets in Oswald's revolver were never ballistically linked to the four bullets that hit Officer Tippett. You know, when a homicide occurs, it's standard operating procedure for the police homicide division to send off the bullets and cartridges to the FBI laboratory in Washington for study and possible identification of the gun that fired him. In this particular case, the homicide unit, understandably shy about advertising the coroner's discovery, sent only one bullet to the FBI lab, and they informed the Bureau that this was the only bullet found in Tippett's body. Well, it was a shock to everybody. The Bureau lab found the bullet didn't match Oswald's revolver. When it discovered its oddity, the Warren Commission was inspired to look for other bullets that might match up better. And although the commission never did get a copy of Tippett's autopsy report, it found out that four bullets rather than one had been found in Tippett's body. So the ordinarily incurious commission asked the FBI to inquire about the three missing bullets. And they were found 4 months later gathering dust in the files of the Dallas Homicide Division. Excuse me. So these bullets were also sent to the FBI lab. But Special Agent Cortland Cunningham, the ballistics expert from the lab, testified before the commission that the lab was unable to conclude that any of the four bullets found in Tippett's body had been fired by the revolver taken from Lee Oswald. One government witness later concluded, "I'm satisfied the two projectiles came from the same weapon," implying that a bullet from Oswald's gun had conclusively matched the ballistics of a bullet found in Officer Tippett. Now, this testimony is clarified by J. Raymond Carroll, a research expert on the shooting of Tippett. For the benefit of anybody who's still confused about the ballistic evidence in the Tippett murder, the FBI experts told the Warren Commission the bullets found in Tippett's body could not be traced to the Oswald revolver. Although it was certainly possible they were fired from that weapon, well, if in fact one was a 38 auto and one was a 38 special, the 38 special in all likelihood was not fired by the Oswald's revolver. Now, the commission hired an outside expert by the name of Nickel, who gave the opinion cited that while they couldn't say it did come from Oswald's revolver, it could have. His opinion has since been thoroughly and completely debunked. None of the other eight ballistic experts who examined the bullet agreed with Nichols that the bullets in Tippett came from Oswald's revolver. And District Attorney Garrison basically caught on about all the funny business with the bullets. The FBI lab found that two of the cartridge cases had been manufactured by Western and two by Remington. And since the lab had already concluded that three of the bullets found in Tippett's body were copper-coated Westerns and one was a lead Remington, well, in actuality, the numbers do not match. There's other evidentiary inconsistencies as well. The jacket discarded by the suspect at the Tippett crime scene was not Oswald's jacket, according to his wife, who knew that he only had two jackets and that wasn't one of them. Crime scene jacket was also a size medium and Oswald wore a small. A medium would have swallowed him up. And to further confound the possibility that Oswald shot Tippett, as I said, it's been established Oswald's revolver had a defective firing pin, which completely prevented it from firing a bullet. So at the bottom of all this, the bottom line, the revolver taken from Oswald at the Texas Theater was not the gun used to kill Tippett. So the official version of Officer Tippett's murder simply does not stand up to scrutiny. If Oswald had been tried for the murder of Officer Tippett, the eyewitness testimony alone would have been destroyed under competent cross-examination. The commission's star witness in the case, Heron Markham, markedly contradicted herself and made false statements, not to mention the fact she initially described the killer in terms that did not resemble Oswald. Even the Warren Commission's own senior counsel later admitted that their star witness had zero credibility. After coming up with the magic bullet theory, they couldn't figure out any way at all to rectify or correct her testimony. The star witness in a Tippit shooting at best was summed up by Joseph Ball, senior counsel to the Warren Commission. In 64, he referred in public debate to her testimony as being full of mistakes and to Ms. Markham herself being an utter screwball. He dismissed her as utterly unreliable, the exact opposite of the report's verdict. Unlike Helen Markham, Aquila Clemens and Frank Wright were very credible witnesses who had excellent views of the crime. Ms. Clemens was sitting on her front porch when she saw the murder of Officer Tippit. After what she claims that there were two men involved in the attack on Tippit, the gunman was a short guy and kind of heavy. Dallas police warned her not to repeat that story to anybody else or she might get hurt. And she wasn't called to give evidence to the Warren Commission. If they really wanted to get to the bottom of all this, they'd have called every witness they could possibly get. But they just wanted the witnesses that followed the party line, so to speak. Well, on that note, we've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow and talk more about some of the problems with the Warren Commission and the later Kennedy investigation. Until then, Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, and that's hoping there is a tomorrow and Nancy Pelosi didn't get us into a war. This is Ken Hudnall saying have a truly great evening.